It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break.
But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to chat with Maria Ross. She's a brand strategist whom I had the pleasure of meeting, oh gosh, it's what, about 5-6 years ago now? It was at the New York Times Small Business Summit. She was part of a panel I was moderating. And Maria and I are going to talk about how you can translate what you may know as your personal brand into a business brand so it can continue to live on even if you're not necessarily part of the equation. So stay tuned for that because it's really fascinating to hear about her four-step process. And to do that, to translate from a personal brand to a business brand, you've got to have a sense of your business as bigger than just you. And that's something I touch on in my report, 10 Steps to a Million Dollar Business. So as you think about what are some of the ways that maybe your business isn't scaling and growing as you would like, and what might be some of the solutions to fix that, you'll want to get a copy of this report. So head on over to businessexponential.com/pod report and get your copy. But first, you may be asking, why would you want to translate your personal brand into a business brand? In order to do that, you want to have a sense of your business becoming more than just you. And I recently read a book by Ken MacArthur called Impact. One of the things he talks about is what makes an idea easy to spread. Well, he outlines a number of criteria. For example, the idea is simple to say, there are easy ways to get the word out, there's value in the idea, it solves a real problem, it provides a benefit. But I think one of the things that he touches on, and I've seen over and over in working with small businesses, is that there's a sense of a bigger mission. There's a sense of a bigger why. And it doesn't have to be, why I'm going to change the world. But we've all been in networking groups, haven't we? Or networking events, and you talk to people, and if their business is all about them, very often you don't get a sense of how they're able to help, how they're able to be of service to others, because it's all about them. It's all about what they do and how they do it. But if you're thinking about how does your company serve a bigger purpose, that's something that I find more exciting to talk about. It's not just, oh yeah, I know this one person and they can do it, but look, there is a business that is dedicated to being of service in this way. And one of the ways that we're going to grow is by encouraging other people to spread the word. So think about what's going to get them excited about it. Is it just you? Or is it that they can be part of something bigger? And that's where translating your personal brand into a business brand can have such an impact. And it's why I'm excited to be talking to our special guest this week, because Maria Ross has created a four-step process for translating that personal brand, that what are you known for, translating that into, and I'll say this with air quotes, into a corporate brand, which is what your company becomes known for. Her process enables that translation in a way that's very smooth and congruent with your current reputation. So it's not something completely jarring that you're suddenly introducing. So a little bit about Maria. She's a brand strategist, an author, and a speaker who believes that cash flow and creativity are not mutually exclusive. God bless. She's the creator of Red Slice and advises startups, entrepreneurs, and small to mid-sized businesses on how to craft irresistible brands. She's the author of Branding Basics for Small Business, How to Create an Irresistible Brand on Any Budget, which is now in its second edition. And she's also written a personal memoir called Rebooting My Brain. She's a dynamic speaker. She has delighted audiences worldwide and has appeared in MSNBC, ABC News, Huffington Post, Forbes, NPR, and Entrepreneur Magazine. And she lives in the Bay Area with her husband and new baby boy and their lovely little black lab mix. So we're delighted to have Maria and her insights here on Business Breakthrough. Hey, Maria, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Nina.
You know, I'm really excited to talk about the fundamentals of building a scalable brand, because one of the things that I've seen and I know I wrestle with myself as a business owner is that if my business is so much about me, how do you find that good, balance is the right word, between emphasizing me and emphasizing my business? You know, setting up a brand that can essentially live on without me.
Absolutely. And I think this is something that a lot of small business owners struggle with because, you know, some have in their mind that they want to build something at a global scale, you know, something with locations everywhere and multi-billion dollars in revenue. And some people start out knowing that even through the course of their career with their business, they might want to keep it small. They might want to keep it boutique. And so, you know, it's really about making that decision at the beginning and then knowing how to position your brand to meet those goals.
Okay. But if you've already started and you're already kind of in it, like you haven't had that clarity at the beginning. I know anything about that.
That's the perfection part of it, but that's not usually how people do it.
So what are some of the ways that we can look at our personal brands and parlay that into a corporate brand?
Well, I've actually worked with a few clients on this very issue, clients who struggled with a business, a very successful business that they created based on their own network, their own personal reputation, their own personal brand, if you will. And there's some simple steps you can take to what I call parlay that personal brand into the brand of the company so that it can live on, like you said, without you. Or even more so, you could still stick around, but if you want to actually grow the business and hire employees and other people might be doing the work rather than you personally, there's ways that you can think about the personal brand that you've established and created and translate that into the brand of the company so that everyone you bring on board can embrace that and represent that well, because your people are going to be your biggest brand ambassadors. And so if you can sort of give them a playbook, you can actually translate that personal brand rather easily.
Okay. And so help me think it through. Do you have tips that you can kind of take us through in terms of, well, how do you think this through? It seems kind of amorphous. I wouldn't even know what the first step would be.
Exactly. I think the first step would be to step 0.5 before the first step would be, do you really have a clear idea of your personal brand? So when you think about your personal reputation, what do people associate with you? What are the brand attributes associated with you? Is it professional and buttoned up? Is it playful and whimsical? Is it quirky and unique? You know, what are the things that you're known for as is? And you know, this is something you can even poll your network or poll people that are close to you, saying, you know, when you think about me and my work, what do you think of my reputation and my image? Is it that, you know, I do whatever it takes to deliver client results? Is it that I'm the most detail-oriented person under the sun? What are the things that make up your personal brand? And also with that personal brand, who are the people that are attracted to you, the customers or clients that are attracted to you personally? Because that's really going to be the audience that you're probably going to want to build on to parlay into your more corporate brand. Because a lot of us, especially if you are in a service-oriented industry, a consultant, a coach, that sort of thing, it's already based on your personal reputation and what drives you and what defines you. So make sure that you're really clear about articulating what that personal brand is, and also what are the marquee values or benefits that you offer. So that sounds really esoteric.
Yeah, can you give me an example?
Yeah, exactly. The best examples I always use with clients are thinking about the auto industry. So there's very different value associated with buying a Honda than there is with buying a Porsche, right? You buy those products for different reasons, and they're valued differently, both from a price perspective, but also from a from an emotion or a psychographic perspective. So think about where you fall in your industry, and the value that you provide. What is it that people are going to want to buy from you? Are they buying luxury, handcrafted cachet? Are they buying, you know, practical, budget-conscious services? What is the value? What do you want to lead with when you sell your products or services? And what benefits do your customers or clients get? So, for example, a customer who buys a Honda is getting a very different benefit from that car than they get than the buyer who buys a Porsche. And so, you know, think about, and I love to use brand analogies. I actually have my clients say, you know, what are you? What car are you in your industry? Or what movie, or what movie star, or something like that. Ooh. It helps you put your arms around how you are represented in the world and how you want people to see you. And once you can clearly articulate, again, you know, what your vibe, what I call your vibe, your brand attributes, your value, what benefits you provide, and to whom you provide it. You know, who is that target ideal customer or client that's attracted to what you offer and that vibe? You can get your, you can articulate your personal brand a little bit more effectively.
Great. So,
so that's step point five. Yeah.
Okay. So step five, because we, for anybody listening, no, we have not gone through steps one through four yet. So you're not missing anything yet. So just to be clear, when you're looking at the personal brand, I'm looking at what is it I'm known for? Who's my audience? What's the vibe? Again, am I luxury? Am I down home? What's kind of the feeling people get from me? And essentially, what are the benefits that I provide? So that's all going into my personal brand. And how does that kind of, how do you take that information and then translate that into my company?
Well, that part's actually very simple. So step one, because that was, again, step 0.5. But step one is to write a brand positioning statement that aligns your personal values as to why you built the company and what value you wanted to offer to clients into a positioning statement for your company. So you translate that to, instead of Nina Kaufman, it's the company delivers XYZ benefits to this particular audience and presents it in this type of style or in this type of vibe.
Okay.
And that's going to ensure that you start the process of transitioning it from you as a person to the company as an entity. So again, that part can be very simple. When I've worked with one particular client I'm thinking of, he had a consulting firm that was really successful because of his personal reputation. Now, the interesting thing about him, and we'll talk about this in the other steps, is he had some very interesting personal experience that we then parlayed into the brand of the company. But really, it was all about, you know, what drives people to seek him out? Well, let's make that the brand position of the company and articulate that, because articulation is the first step to being able to share it outside of your own brain and share it with the people on your staff or your partners or, you know, other sales reps you might bring on board. Articulation is that very important first step.
Okay.
So a brand positioning statement's really, really important.
Okay. But it sounds like and I'm not going to make light of it, that a brand positioning statement is, in a way, just retranslating what's my personal brand positioning statement and substituting the words my company for Nina.
Absolutely. And then when you think about it more from a company perspective, there might be other benefits you can provide that maybe you personally as one person working on their own can't.
Right.
So you can adapt it if you need to, but it gets you thinking out. It just changing the act of changing that language can take you really, really far, because now it's not just about you. It's about, oh, I'm working for this company that represents these things. If we think about Apple, for example, and a lot of what went into Apple early was, you know, Steve Jobs' personal philosophy. Well, you know, Steve Jobs is no longer with us, but Apple has adopted those values and that style and those benefits as its own.
Great. Great example. So if step one is the brand positioning statement, what is step two?
So the second step is to really focus on the attributes we were talking about early, the style, the vibe. How can you adopt your personal trademark tone or manner into a broader corporate personality, into the copywriting or the visuals of your brand? So this is where you start to get into the actual fun stuff of brand, you know, the look, the feel, the message.
Okay.
For going back to the example I was talking about earlier about that one client, he was a former Navy lieutenant.
Oh.
So he had a very specific style, a very specific way he spoke. He had a very, very sharp, keen sense of humor. He was to the point, no BS. And that's what we translated into his company's copywriting. So the company, quote unquote, started talking like he did. And that was really, really effective. And, you know, let's say he stepped away, then the company would start to adopt that tone and would start to relate that tone related to the company itself, not just to him. So think about how you talk, how you present yourself. Again, quirky and whimsical, steadfast and buttoned up, whatever it is. And what is the style in which you talk to people that makes them personally connect with you? Start to articulate that as, how does that inform my visuals? How does that inform my copywriting? How does that inform my message?
Terrific. Forgive me. I'm taking copious notes here, although this is being recorded, so I don't even know quite why I'm taking the notes. But and maybe that's part of my brand. I take notes.
yeah. And you know what's really funny about this is, you know, people fall into that trap of, well, I've got this really unique personality that people are drawn to. This is why people work with me. And all of a sudden, when they start thinking about translating that to a corporate entity, they turn into robots. They start talking and writing copy that sounds like nothing people ever say. It's full of jargon. It sounds stilted. It sounds boring. And they equate that with, well, that means I sound professional. Mm. And, you know, human does not equal non-professional. So
right.
Again, this is where knowing your audience is really important. You know, if that's been what's attracted people to you and to working with you all these years, then heck, let's translate that into the company and adopt that as a tenant of the company. This is how we're going to talk to our clients. This is how we're going to engage them. This is how we're going to attract them.
Right. Terrific. All right. So I've got my brand positioning statement. I have a better sense of the attributes of, you know, me as they can be employed in the company. And there is a step three.
There is. So this is where you can start to use really interesting, unique, wow, I didn't know that aspects of your brand, of your background to create a unique brand slant that no other competitor can claim. So again, kind of going back to my Navy lieutenant, you know, we were able to build into the brand very playful imagery, very strong values in his manifesto statement, which is step four. We'll talk about that in a second, but that were true to his background as a Navy lieutenant. So, you know, things that only he can claim. If there's other consultants in his industry and they weren't in the Navy, you know, they can't really claim those things. It doesn't really make sense. It seems inauthentic for
right.
them to start maybe using military jargon or equating things to keeping the ship running in tip-top shape, things like that.
Right.
So we were able to use aspects of his background to just create something that was very hard for people to copy. And so you want to think about your experience, your personal likes and dislikes, your work experience, your education, crazy things that you've done in your past. Are there ways that you can parlay that into the voice and the values of the company so that anyone who joins the company can sort of adopt that as their own and know that when they're getting hired, this is, you know, this is how we talk around here. This is what we value and this is what we believe.
Okay, great. And you touched on something that I want to circle back to, but for next there is a fourth step. So I want to make sure we
there
get
is.
All four down.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the fourth one is related to what we just talked about is actually creating and writing that values manifesto, which is grounded in your personal values, but you phrase it as guiding principles for the whole team to adopt and deliver. So for example, if we look at a company like Nordstrom, right, which Nordstrom was a person, the company started with one person, one family, and it's parlayed into a brand that we all know and love and don't necessarily equate with one person. But the values that the company was founded on are the ones that are still alive and executed today. And that comes from a founder saying, this is important to me.
Okay. So what kinds of things are articulated as values? That seems very amorphous.
So it could be, I usually phrase these for clients as I believe statements. So okay. It's how you approach your work. You know, there's lots of branding consultants. There's lots of business consultants. There's lots of business lawyers. Oy. What is specific to how you approach your work? You know, I believe that, you know, for me, it's I believe that brands should do good in the world. I believe that anyone can tell an irresistible story. You know, there's things that I believe about how I approach my work, and that can translate into the values of my company, of what we are doing. So in the past, when I've worked with clients, it's you know, I believe it could be as simple as the customer is always right, you know, but maybe that's not what you believe. So that shouldn't be in your values manifesto.
Okay.
You know, I believe that it could be, you know, everyday moments should be celebrated. And maybe that's something related to something your company does. Maybe you make picture frames or you make jewelry, you know, whatever it is that you do, you've got an approach to it. So articulate that approach. What are the things that you believe in terms of how you do your work, the kinds of people you want to work with, what you ultimately want to do in the world? So a little bit of your mission, your vision, things like that. But all of those start with the single person that started the company. So if you've got personal values of honesty, integrity, customer service, work hard, play hard. I've worked with companies that's a big part of the founder, and that has parlayed into the culture of the company. You know, we will do whatever it takes to make things right. All of those things are values and approaches for how you run a company. And you can build that into a value statement that says, this is what our company believes. And it's based on what the founder believed. Again, going back to Apple, it's about, you know, amazing design. Mm-hmm. It's about creating products that basically become embedded into your everyday life. Those are still very, very strong values of Apple. And those are based on Steve Jobs' own personal values.
Well, that's exciting because when you look at it from, oh, my business is just me and I've got my brand, it sounds like very clear steps to be able to kind of take it out of your head and just you to start articulating it in a way that it can scale for the company overall. And to jump into my question, you touched on it. What are some of the results you've seen in working with companies when that personal brand has translated into the corporate brand and how that affects the way employees are hired or improvements in the way people work with vendors and partners when you've got that clarity in the corporate brand?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge influence on that. And that's why it's so important to actually articulate, define, and share these things. I'm actually working with a tech client right now, and they have a really, really strong culture and brand, but they've never really sat down and articulated and defined it. It's sort of just we know it when we see it, which works when you're 10 people, right? Yeah. But when, you know, they're at 1,500, 2,000 people all over the world, and you can't, you know, not everybody can meet the CEO. Not everybody's going to have met the founders. And so it's very important. It's sort of like, you know, oral history traditions in a tribe. You know, eventually those things get lost unless you articulate and define them and embed them into the processes and the practices of the organization. So, you know, when you say we do whatever it takes to make it right, what does that mean? You know, are there actual customer service policies in place? Are you empowering your frontline employees to do things that they don't have to get 9 approvals for? Do you trust your customer that when they say they received a product that was broken, that they don't actually have to send it back to you, that you're going to send them something to replace it? You know, all those little things are actions and pieces of execution that can bring this brand and these values to life. But until you start with that articulation, you don't know how to embed that brand into the things that you do every day. So, you know, what I see, especially where it really starts is in the HR department. It really starts in the hiring department because it's sort of like, okay, on day one, when we're not even day one, day, you know, -10, because we're interviewing people, So how do we know who the right people are to interview that are going to embrace our values, embrace our brand? Your people are your most important brand ambassadors. And if you're bringing the wrong people into the organization that will never embrace this brand, that will never understand it, that will never live it, then you know you're doing yourself a disservice. You really need to be attracting the right people into the organization that can make the brand live on. And so it's, you know, it starts there, but it's also, you know, what do they get on day one as a new hire? What's their orientation like? And then what do you do for your current employees that have been there? You know, do they have resources? Do they have ways that they can meet with their teams and determine, you know, let's do a check-in every quarter and see if we're living out our brand values or if we're missing opportunities to infuse more of our brand into what we do every day. So again, there's just lots of opportunities, but you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a huge deal when you're influencing recruiting and hiring and bringing in people into the organization.
And what's fascinating is the way you're talking about the brand. Obviously, it's not just my marketing materials. This is something that seeps into, in a way, the DNA of the company and must seep into the DNA of the company so that we can have the systems that work from an HR perspective, from a strategic partner perspective, from an employee and a business owner perspective.
Absolutely. You're right on target, because that's, you know, the battle cry I'm always out there is, you know, your brand is not just your logo. Your brand is not just marketing's job. Your brand is the soul and essence of your company. And it's conveyed through your visuals and your marketing, but it's also conveyed through who and how you hire. It's conveyed through how you treat your vendors, you know, your accounting and finance department. It's conveyed through your office space and what it looks like and what it feels like to walk into your building or your store or your office. So, you know, you need to infuse the brand into all of your operations. And, you know, often this brand exercise, of course, starts in the marketing department, but the more cross-functional input and also cross-functional thought you can get into this, the better, because otherwise you run into a brand identity crisis. And this is where, you know, you've developed this nice little brand positioning statement and this gorgeous values manifesto, and we talk about how much we love our customers and we are all about customer service, but then somebody forgot to tell the person who selected the automated phone line for support, and people are on hold for 45 minutes, they get routed to 3 different places. You get disconnected. You know, that's a actual practical application of a brand position of we love our customers. Is how do you treat them when they call? You know, what is that experience like for them? Because the experience of your customers is one of the most important ways to convey your brand. So you can say all you want about what your brand is. You can have an awesome looking website and a great logo and just be like, we are so super cool and we're all about customer service. But where the rubber hits the road is when I do business with you, is that the experience I actually get?
Now, Beth, that's a great point. And can you talk just a little bit as we wrap up, what exactly is a brand guide? Is it a distillation of all of these things and practices? How does that differ from, let's say, an operations manual? Talk a little bit about that and what goes into creating one.
Yeah. So, I mean, people call these a lot of different things depending on the culture of their company. Right now I'm working with a client that we're going to call it a brand playbook, but you can call it a brand guide. You can call it a brandscape report. You can call it whatever, but it's really just kind of a Bible that informs, again, every area of the organization. And the types of things that you probably want to start out with in your brand guide or brand playbook are your brand positioning statement, a mission or vision, if you've actually articulated one from your brand positioning statement, your values, your design guidelines. So once you determine, you know, based on our brand position and our customers and what we're trying to communicate, what are the right colors we should be using? What is the right imagery? You know, you decide those things after you determine your brand, not before. So, you know, it's your copywriting guidelines, your messaging guidelines, that voice and tone I was talking about earlier.
Right.
You know, you can include a paragraph or two in your brand playbook about this is how we talk. I've seen brand guides and worked on brand guides where they even had, these are specifically words we will not use. These are words we always use. We don't use contractions. We do use contractions. We use first person. We use third person. I mean, obviously, some of that might need to change depending on the vehicle. But, you know, you can put all of that information in a brand guide and talk about something that can, you know, live on if you can't have your hands in the day-to-day. And then you can have things like your ideal audience or your ideal customer or client profiles in that brand guide. You know, what is the narrative around those specific people that you're targeting? You can have your differentiators and your main benefits. That's always a good thing I like to include in brand guides for clients.
What are differentiators?
Differentiators are literally how you're different from your competition. So you can talk about what you do all day long, but that's great. So why should I hire you over the person next door? What makes you different? What makes your product or services different? Or what makes your approach, you know, that can be a differentiator as well. Your methodology or your approach to your work. Even if you offer, you know, like for me, for example, I'm a brand strategist. There's like, you know, a bazillion of us in the world. But, you know, I feel like some of my differentiators are obviously different than other people because they're based on my approach to branding and how I work with my clients. So all of those things can be part of your differentiators. And you want to also be able to articulate proof points around those differentiators and those benefits. So it's great to say, again, you know, we love our customers or customer service or whatever that benefit is. You know, we help you lose weight. We help you be more efficient. We help you generate more revenue. Great. Now that you're saying all these things, how can you back them up? Those are proof points. So proof points are things like, you know, press exposure, awards you've won, customer testimonials, case studies. Maybe something very specific about your product or service that can prove, you know, this, we are the only ones that have this technology that enables this benefit, for example. So those are all things that are really helpful to have in a brand guide, because you can then just give that brand guide, not just internally. I find it really helpful when you're hiring external designers or external copywriters or external marketing consultants. Mm-hmm. You go, here, let's just skip 3 weeks of me having to download all this to you. And they can instantly hit the ground running. And it actually saves you time and money and billable hours on their part, because they're not trying to ferret out that information for themselves.
Terrific. So last question, again, thinking about their personal brand, trying to make the transition to a scalable corporate brand. Mm-hmm. What are, let's say, some of the big mistakes or big no-nos that you've seen clients step in?
That's a good question. I think mostly it's skipping these steps and expecting it to be as easy as, well, I'm just going to start going out there and just have other people be selling the services for me or selling the products for me. And then the audience gets confused because they're like, well, no, but I wanted to work with you. So I don't really understand how this fits in. But one of the biggest mistakes is because they haven't articulated and defined everything we've talked about, they bring someone new on who maybe has the skills to do the work, but is not doing it in the same manner that you would be doing it. They're not doing it with the same values, the same vibe, the same, all of that. And so that's where they end up falling down, is that, you know, and it's no one's fault. You know, usually it's not, if that person's very good at their job, it's not their fault. But maybe because it wasn't articulated, they didn't even hire the right person in the first place. And so they hired someone maybe that is the complete antithesis to how you work. And, you know, that's just a recipe for disaster. So I would say, you know, kind of our whole conversation is the cautionary tale here of, if you don't articulate, define, and share that brand strategy and use it to inform all of your operational decisions beyond marketing, that's where personal brands translating into corporate brands tend to fall down.
Terrific. Well, Maria, this has been, as I say, I've been taking copious notes. So, so wonderful, so informative. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to you for tuning in today. You know, I really want you to have a breakthrough in your business as well. So as a loyal listener, I want to give you free access to one of my special video trainings that I call Ignite. In this Ignite webinar, I share my quick growth scale formula that lets you bust through the plateau, design a self-sustaining business, and live the life you deserve. You can get free access by going to businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Again, that's businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Go there now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Business Breakthrough.